Pizza Noir by Denver Day, Book 1, Chapter 15. We headed to the diner for a late lunch, the lieutenant and I. We both ordered spaghetti and iced tea. We talked about things linear and quantifiable, field sports instead of track sports, weather instead of werewolves. After I told him about Lopez's call that morning, McKinney steered the conversation back to hockey. I resisted the change of subject. So where are the werewolves in Arizona? Are they the girls who played the match and then disappeared? Or are they the ones who never showed up to play in the first place? Or are there now two of each team, one wolfy and the other one not? Maybe there has to be doubling up of reality before there could be werewolves in the first place, I mused. If that were the case, then I wonder what the alternate histories are that led up to the China Wolf Lady and to our new regular in the morgue. I don't know, Rick. Could be that we've got some derelict strain of the Lily White Queen of England, who somewhere in time is as pure as driven snow. But for our purposes, the Queen is iced down in the Pierce County morgue, covered in jizz, fur, and tattoos. Friday evening arrived. I worked the phones through dusk, picking at the various involved West Coast agencies, debriefing them on the Arizona situation and of our development with Anders, Ho, and the Fur Lady Number 3. No one else yet had found any of their morgue skips, neither fairly reanimated nor out on the town otherwise, but the weekend had just begun. My desk phone rang about 8:30. It was Lopez again, this time with just a mild doozy. It seems that the two San Diego girls who disappeared during the 11 October murder wave, the only ones whose bodies weren't found right there at the scene, had just showed up to work at the establishment from which they disappeared after their shift the previous week. Weird thing is, Rick, though, they've lost a week. Far as they know, in their minds, Lopez said, they thought they were showing up for their October 10th shift, the one they disappeared after. Their manager let them start their shift, says they're there now, both on cocktail duty tonight. So he phoned me about 30 minutes ago. I'm on my way now to see what kind of report I can get from them. Well, good luck with that, Lopez. Let's catch up in the morning, I said. I hung up the phone, which rang again before I could take my hand off of the receiver. It was Dixie at the other end of the line. It's her, Ricky. I did a bit of poking around. At her latent canine evolutionary traits have been hyper-accentuated, like she went through some instantaneous evolutionary retrofitting that somehow emphasized certain genes and traits. But it is she, or was, no doubt, a fascinating specimen and one unique to my experience. She has an elongated jaw, floppy ears, and the like, but she is more or less still biologically human insofar as blood work, pH, bone structure. My previous forensic marks are still visible, but there's no evidence of any of the embalming chemicals I shoved her with after her first post-mortem examination. And that's one of the things I can't explain to you in scientific terms. But anyway, I've embalmed her a second time, and a couple more things. She paused, rustling papers I could hear. This time her last supper was the spunky hind flesh of Carrie Anders. Her penultimate meal seems to have been a burger and fries, same as Ho and Anders. Maybe she wolferized during the three-way, I really can't say. And as to any questions of the when, where, how, why, and what the fuck of her being back from the dead as a wolf lady, she paused again mid-sentence and shifted the phone to her other ear, as she was wont to do frequently when on the phone. You're just going to have to call a vicar or something. It ain't my department. Anyway, she and the other two are iced down back there. Whenever you have time, have a look if you want. Well, I appreciate it, Dixie. No problem, Thompson, she answered, and we hung up. Lopez drove his unmarked sedan down to the topless bar to take statements from the two girls who had just lost a week of their lives without knowing it. Down I-5 a few miles to a nautically themed place called Cat Shakers. The two girls and he sat at a long wooden table in the manager's office. Two very cute, very giggly young Latinas. They both absolutely nothing. They both knew absolutely nothing about their recent statuses as missing persons. The first they'd heard of the whole story was when they got back to work an hour ago, under the unassuming impression that it was still Friday, October 10th. There was very little else for Lopez to include otherwise. The girls were genuinely startled at the story they were hearing, but they seemed to look and feel fine. He asked what they remembered about their last 24 hours, and they both recounted the day per their recollection, which to their recollection consisted of the night of October 9th to that very moment, on the early evening of October 10th, they figured. They related a seamless and relatively uneventful rundown to Lopez. He tried to explain to them as best that he could that they had, as a matter of fact, both disappeared under quite very foreboding circumstances in the early morning nearly a week ago, in the wee hours of October 11 after their shift at Cat Shakers, on the same morning when dozens of their peers were murdered all along the West Coast, and that they had been gone just a few hours short of a full week. "But we just got here," one of them said. And they both giggled, sipping soda, silly sounding or not. The current date was October 17, and Lopez suggested they call their friends and family whom they were assuredly concerned. Lopez could understand that this whole thing was pretty fruity sounding to these kids, and it was sounding more and more ridiculous to him also. And the events that he'd recently been experiencing while investigating the case and having to document in the case file, trying not only to put it all in order, but to explain it, to solve it, to close the case. These things were making hay with his understanding of reality, sort of making a mockery of his duties and turning them into some kind of plaything of the fates. And to these two girls, it was just a story, and an incorrect one as far as they were concerned, as they, in fact, were sitting right here, living, breathing, and young and attractive, and visibly antsy to get onto their shifts as cocktail waitresses. It was plain to them, and it also was obvious to them that it was obvious to the detective that his story was a funny one. Yet Lopez persisted, insisting back to them that they had been gone for a week, and there was no real evidence from the girls' perspective except for words that didn't jive with what they had experienced. Well, and that in the calendar. Basically, their ears were hearing a weird story, yes, but they were fine. For all they knew, the police and their manager were making all this shit up for some reason, and they were right in as much as their perspective was the one that actually made sense to them. Not ours. Being a week since most of this oddity began in earnest, I decided to haunt the chapel a little bit. I went through the squeeze box, which was full of blue smoke and perfumed taint of all stripes. There was nothing of note, and I didn't stay long, although I was almost half surprised not to see Anders and Ho in there in fur. The diddler was also doing a brisk business, though it felt like there was something missing in the air in there, too. I didn't stay long there, either. MC's was okay. I actually sat and had some nachos there, but there was no Alvarez, and there was no kitty liquor, nor were there any of my other new friends, and I went by the hotel where Tina's band played. But the band was off that night for some reason, and the relatively quiet jukebox replaced the music source in there for now. And the place was pretty dead. I drove down to the liquor's warehouse where the team was scrimmaging and a good gathering of their groupies were hanging out. Typical liquor's Friday night. I saw Sandy and Kitty and waved, and they waved back but didn't break formation. None of the bookies were there. I went back to the car, got back on the road, and it was raining again. I drove down the coroner's office and keyed the front door, walked back to the body lockers and pulled out Anders. And there she was, white as a sheet, hard as a rock, stone dead and naked as the day she died. Dixie had cleaned up the blood from wounds on her running gear, and I could see clearly the deep and wide canine-inflicted gouges. Next up, pulled out Ho, whose wounds Dixie had also cleaned, although unlike the teeth wounds on Anders' hind end, Ho's flesh wounds had more of a bunched, shredded lettuce look since they were inflicted by sharp claws, not sharp teeth. Next, I pulled out the other girl, the furry one, the kind of She kind of looked like a bigger version of the puppet alien character Alf from that old TV show, or some sort of bloody fraggle from hell. But of course, this was no puppet. She was naked too, but for her shiny coat. Her shiny fur coat, which was a little spattered and matted with dried blood and various other dried fluids in various places. The fur on her underside, on her belly and the like, where her 8 small breasts were, for example, was much shorter and slicker than the rest of her coat, though still here too. A wonder of nature. I returned the 3 back to their silos, walked back outside, and locked the door behind me. I went to the diner and read the last few days' newspapers over a couple of nice Tabasco omelets and a pot of decaf. The waitress was chatty and warm in contrast with the rainy weather. I was there for a few hours, and the duration of which the mindful waitress emptied my ashtray several times. Coffee Joe arrived about 11:30 and joined me in the diner bar. He ordered eggs and bacon. Dear waitress kept the coffee coming. I filled in Joe about the reinvigorated come-dead-again furry girl and of the simultaneous demise of Anders and Ho. As of about an hour and a half ago, they were all still at room temperature in the morgue, I said, but reality's lately proven capable of turning itself upside down and way short of 90 minutes these days. And I told him about the other morgue disappearances up and down I-5. You're way more interesting than any newspaper, Joe laughed, and he pulled his flask out of his coat and generously dashed some of its contents into my coffee, and then his coffee ski. Having finished his own night breakfast, he removed a rumpled pack of smokes out of his shirt pocket and lit a cigarette of his own. Ricky, this too will pass, he said. Cheers. Yeah. Like a kidney stone, I said. But yes, cheers.